One begins the eternal learning curve. The more you know, the more you realize you have more to learn.
At the end of the day, you can be as good as gold, but if you don't have passion for wine, no matter how good you are, it isn't going to work.
And Mother Nature is your partner all the way until it's done.
Whereas the U.S., you go into a big grocery store and you have 2,000 different glass bottles full of wine.
My father told me, never work for money. Work to accomplish something. Making money is the result of doing something right.
The bottom line is, it's all about the soil.
Well, the results are really the benefit of our doing our homework.
What makes winemaking so interesting and fascinating is that every single year it's been different.
There was definitely a sense that we were all sort of in a pioneering endeavor. It was fun.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 120. This week, we feature Ann Moses and Donald Patz of Patz & Hall Winery in Sonoma.
Every tasting room has its very own experience, but a visit to Patz & Hall in Sonoma is really a completely unique experience. Our interview with Ann Moses and Donald Patz, two of the four partners, included that experience. In fact, this tasting room is brand new after they relocated from the southern end of Napa Valley to just a few blocks from downtown Sonoma. We originally interviewed Heather Patz for podcast number 33 back in May of 2011. Three down and one winemaker to go. So I am here with Ann Moses and Donald Patz of Patz & Hall Winery in Sonoma. How are you both doing today?
We're great.
You are great.
That's because the sun is screaming outside and it's just beautiful, isn't it?
It's like this every day here.
Except in the winter when it's raining.
I'm never coming back. Do you have a little box anywhere I can live in? So, I guess the first thing I want to talk about is we're in this beautiful new winery here in Sonoma, not terribly far from the square, probably about 3 or 4 miles, maybe, give or take.
Something like that, yeah.
And on 8th Street, and a beautiful place to drive up to all these new vines that have been planted. Tell me about this property and how you ended up here.
Well, we started looking for gracious place where we could entertain and educate people about our wines. So we started looking and we came across this place, which was a private residence. And I think we walked through it and I think almost instantaneously, we felt like this was our home.
One of the big advantages of this space, aside from the fact that it really looked like the kind of space that we should be in, is it's very close to where the winery really is. Our winery is just less than a quarter of a mile down the road from us. So very connected to where we actually produce the wine.
And from a cost point of view, big difference because your original tasting room that we had visited
was microscopic.
Well, it was small and it was also over at the very southern end of Napa Valley, almost not quite in American Canyon, but down that way.
Yes.
And we were outgrowing that space. We wanted to see more people. We wanted to entertain groups, and we just found that we couldn't do it there.
Well, one thing I want to mention for visitors when they come here to Sonoma, if they'd like to come here, this is a by appointment experience. I'm going to use that word rather than just a tasting, correct?
Absolutely. So we have several different types of tasting experiences. We have our bar, and that's open 10 to 4 on every day except Tuesday and Wednesday, and it's a seated bar tasting that's on the hour, and you need to make reservations for that. Where we're sitting here, this is our salon experience, and we have that 3 times a day, and you need to make reservations for that.
And that's important because you want that experience. It's not just a matter of belling up, as we talked about your bar, which has seats. It's not just a belly-up experience and someone pouring and coming back in a couple of minutes and pouring again. This is learning exactly about what you're doing and as Donald, you said before, the various vineyards.
It's a complicated program, and we really have educators that are going to be there to taste through the wines with you and explain how each one of the wines are different and kind of lead you through the whole thing. It's a lot of fun.
That's what a wine tasting should be, right?
I think so.
Should be fun.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun. I mean, the educational part comes along with the fun, the idea of learning where it comes from, what it's all about. And then you're right here in the middle of the vineyard, which makes it that much more interesting.
Well, it's not very much fun to taste and be educated about wines that don't taste good. So probably the most important thing is that the wines taste really, really good here. So it makes it all the much more fun to be able to learn more about it.
I will say that as a wine lover myself, to be in the experience in a vineyard to taste the wine, it is different. You really, it's something about that that's very special to taste it. And you want to take that experience home, right?
Well, hope so.
I want to take that experience home. And since neither of you will fit my luggage, that wouldn't work. So do we want to go ahead and do a little tasting
here? Let's taste
sure.
through the wines.
We have all this
sure.
wine sitting here, and I, you know, don't want it to let it go to waste.
And you're probably thirsty.
A little bit. So I'll leave it to you.
Okay, great. Why don't you start, Donald?
Sure. Yeah, the first wine up is the 2012 Dutton Ranch Russian River Valley Chardonnay. This is a wine that we've been making for more than 10 years. It's a fantastic example, I think, of Russian River, but also the Dutton family who have been producing grapes over in Sonoma since the late 60s. And we have a significant portion of that original planting going into this wine. It's over 40% of this particular wine is coming from grapevines planted in 1969. So style of winemaking that we do is focuses on very sort of traditional Burgundian techniques. We know we're going to get California wines out of it because we're using California grapes, but the idea is to use techniques like barrel fermentation, surly aging, malolactic fermentation, small French oak barrels, in order to create wines that we think have great internal harmony and lots of rich California flavor. Great acidity. Makes them fun for food, but these can be consumed on their own as well.
That's a wonderful wine. I've had your Chardonnay and your Pinots before. I will say this, quite frankly, you make excellent wine. It's what I call an eye-opening experience because I'm a Cab lover, and to go to Pinot and to taste what you guys make and to go to Chardonnay, I've not always sought out Chardonnay, but I enjoy what you make because it's full body and has great finish. It's just, you know, it's great stuff.
Thank you.
No, I'm gushing. Sorry.
It's all right. No, we really like to get produce a wine that's balanced, flavorful, has all the components that make great wine great.
I think one thing that people sometimes are surprised about is the quality level that we're doing. We don't actually own these vineyards. So we go into the vineyard with the owner of the vineyard and or vineyard manager and select rows that are going to become the Pats and Hall block. And we will use the grapes from those same vines year after year. So it's really comparable, even though we don't own these vineyards. If you go back several vintages and try them, they're really examples of each vintage reflected from the exact same grapevines.
That certainly adds to the consistency when you get the same block of grapes, the same clone year after year.
This idea of selecting exactly what you want, to me, this just seems like a very complex process because it's not something you can, you know, you just, this is not throwing darts at a dartboard. You're being very specific about what you've tasted, what the grapes are like. Give me a little idea of how you make these decisions.
Well, James Hall, who is our winemaker and one of the founders, he has spent years and years out in the vineyards, out bird dogging, essentially, great vineyard sites all over Sonoma, primarily where we get most of our grapes, and also down south to Santa Lucia Highlands, and then all the way up to Mendocino. So we also have grape growers who are developing sites calling us and having us go out and look at the sites to see if it's potentially a vineyard that we would like to use.
So it's almost a specialty, really, to have that ability to pick what you want.
Yeah, you know, I guess if you get a chance to have the A++ site and own it yourself, that's really a fantastic opportunity because you can control everything perfectly around it. But most vineyard sites aren't A++ sites. And so since we don't have enormous resources to go out there and buy essentially an infinite number of vineyard sites to go looking for those, what we did was we turned it around. We said, we can find great growers. We can work with them to find the best parts of their own vineyards to bring into Pats and Hall. So that's been the paradigm that we've used. And then beyond that, what we do is choose grapes that match the style of winemaking that we want to do. If you own the vineyard, you have to adapt your style of winemaking to the grapes that you're going to get year after year. You learn from the vineyard what things work best. But we took it the other way around and said, these techniques most consistently produce the most thrilling Chardonnay or Pinot Noir wines. And so we're looking for grapes that match our style of winemaking as opposed to matching our style of winemaking to a particular grape.
That makes a lot of sense. I like that you use the word thrilling. From what I'm looking at on the list here, you're sourced from a number of different areas. You're looking at Russian River. You're looking at Carneros, which is, we are in Carneros.
Yes, we are.
You're legitimately still in Carneros here. When you're in this situation of you know, growing, I mean, this area is such a great area for Pinot and for Chardonnay in general, but is this a matter of a word of mouth thing? Is this something you hear from other people when it comes to looking at properties? You know, how do you make that decision? Or is it just a matter of availability of grapes?
We're seeking out great sites. And as I said before, we have a lot of people calling us, and it's very easy to say no, because it really, these sites have to be exquisite. They have to have viticultural practices that are excellent. They have to produce the wines that we believe that can really showcase what we're trying to do with the wines. So it's a little bit of everything. And people will call us like, hey, I've got this site that I want to develop. You want to come out and look? And we make those decisions based on that.
Makes sense. Now, it was a couple of years ago that we met Heather Patz and interviewed her over in Napa. And there are four partners here at Patz & Hall. And obviously, as you say, we have 50% here. And we're missing James Hall, which down the road we'll catch up with him, I hope. And he is your winemaker.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just wanted to get that out real quick. About how many cases are you doing?
Well, we have two wines that are Appalachian wines. That's the Sonoma Coast Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And with that, that's close to over 20,000 cases. The Dutton Ranch is about 6,000 cases. And the remainder is our single vineyard. So as a total, that's about 30,000 cases.
Okay, so a respectable small amount, I would say.
Yes, we're really, you know, we mentioned this earlier in our walkabout that the most important thing is the quality of the wines that we produce. And we have a beautiful space to highlight them in, but we are very focused on maintaining the quality of what we do.
I don't want to slow progress on the tasting, so do we want to move on to the next one?
Let's try the Hyde Vineyard.
So we've been working with Larry Hyde since 1990. We were using Hyde Vineyard Chardonnay when we were making our Napa Valley Chardonnay Cuvée. We started making a single vineyard Chardonnay and Pinot Noir from Larry Hyde in 1996. So this wine is primarily Wente clone. It's a clone that Larry has developed and continued to refine over the years as he's replanted his vineyard. For me, the Hyde Vineyard is one of my favorite sites. It's got an incredible mineral character, great acidity. It's very, you know, for me, Chablisian. It has a great fruit purity.
I see your point about Chablis. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. And definitely the minerality. This is, what a complete difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to do, you know, sometimes as many as eight or more different Chardonnays in a given vintage, the most important thing I think about that is that the wines be different. If they all sort of are variations on the exact same theme, then probably you would have been better off simply blending them and being done with it. But part of the selection process, when we look at new vineyard sites, is this going to be a unique signal inside the other wines that we're currently making? And or is it going to be better than something else that we're making? So that are we replacing or are we just adding? Those kinds of questions.
We like to look for sites that have a unique signature. The winemaking itself is very transparent. The Chardonnays are all barrel fermented, aged early with malolactic, with lees stirring. So the differences you can see are really the site itself and the clone selection.
Now, to the best of my knowledge, everything you're making is Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
To the best of our knowledge, it is too.
Okay, good. At least I'm on the right track with that. Is there any thought to the future of any? I'm clear of the fact that I don't think you'll be making Cabernet. That's just my guess. But would you be looking into anything Sauvignon Blanc or any maybe a Riesling or something like that, or is that just in the cards? You don't know.
Well, we certainly love all different types of wine. What we are doing now is we're developing a sparkling wine program.
Oh, nice.
Which is Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And we have 2012 and 2013 vintage under Tirage. And we're very excited about that.
I would love to try that when that comes out. Sparkling wine is, in my opinion, for the casual drinker, the most underrated drink out there. And I think it's one of those things I love turning people on to. I don't know if you see that here. Obviously you don't have anything to pour at this moment, but especially men are afraid of it, is what I'm trying to say.
Why are they afraid?
I think they see it as a girl drink, or whatever you want to call
it. But sabering. How manly is that?
I don't know. I've never tried it.
The potential of severing your arm while you're opening a bottle of wine.
That's right.
It's like barbecuing.
The chance that there could be blood. That's okay. But I mean, whenever I do gatherings, I start with a sparkling wine or champagne.
I think we mostly do, too.
Do you? And I think that's an idea of people just learning that, oh, wow, this is a great way, because it's a great palate cleanser, just and it goes down so beautifully.
Wakes your palate up. It is festive. I mean, it's the start of all great evenings, I think.
Very refreshing. Yeah.
So this is going to be then a white specifically then, I'm assuming then, since it's a short.
Yes.
So what led you to decide to looking at the idea of doing sparkling?
I think because we love to drink it.
That's a good reason.
Right.
Not too complicated.
Well, it's Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. So it's stuff we've already been working with. And so it made a lot of sense that if you're going to look at the possibility of doing something new, sparkling wine is one thing that that is new but utilizes the grapes we're so familiar with. And to go back to your question about other grape varieties, it's fascinating. It's really actually a super temptation for most winemakers is to run off and do 15 or 20 new wines out of new grape varieties or old grape varieties, or find this little site that, you know, grows Riesling on top of a mountain someplace. It appeals to the personality of anybody who's in the wine business to go on that sort of quixotic search for perfection. And I think that for us, really, the focus needs to be and continue to be on Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. There's plenty of new things to learn about both of these grapes.
And there's lots of new exciting sites that are being developed. And we love that adventure.
That's the whole thing, isn't it? Wine is its own adventure. I mean, as a business, that can be a little bit scary, being adventurous. You still need to make a profit to be able to feed the machine. But wine is that road, isn't it?
Well, great wine is delicious, and there's always an appetite for incredible wines.
I think also that, you know, the idea of running close to the edge is where most of the most thrilling and exciting wines come from, I think. And having the winemaker be one of the partners is critical, because as a winemaker who's not a partner, is sometimes feel like I need to be safe so I keep my job. But if you have a winemaker who's not, we can feel a little more confident about trying and being more experimental, or perhaps a little bit edgier in the way that we make our wines, and feel like we're probably not going to have to fire our winemaker.
That would be difficult, to say the least, and maybe a little...
Certainly more awkward.
Yeah, very awkward, I'd say. It is kind of unique, though. I hadn't really thought about that. There aren't too many owners that are actually winemakers.
I think that's true.
Yeah, I'm kind of running it through my head as we speak, and there aren't too many that I've met in the process. Let's move on here.
So next up is Hudson Vineyard, also from Carneros. Not too far, actually, from Hyde Vineyard in terms of the physical distance, but quite a different style of wine has emerged from our program on this one, and it's certainly more smoky. There's a richer element, deeper, thicker kind of wine than the Hyde. Very, very exciting wine to drink.
Lots of orchard fruit, where for when you look at the Hyde, which is about 5 miles east of Hudson, it's a different profile. It's more citrus, more mineral, where the Hudson's more apple-y, pear. It definitely has that oiliness and viscosity.
But still good acidity. I mean, sometimes when you...
Yes.
I agree with you what you said, but sometimes when people hear oily and viscosity, they assume, you know, sort of heavy on the palate. No, it's got great underlying acidity that refreshes at the end.
No, it's not a heavy, and actually it's a good term for it, refreshing. Mm-hmm. Very much, again, like the first one, I think, in that regard, refreshing. But
this is the end of part one of our interview with Donald Patz and Ann Moses. Download Part 2 from lifebetweenthevines.com or by visiting iTunes.